All right, we are going to officially get started tonight. Good evening, everybody, and thank you so much for joining us tonight for the culmination of our first ever midwinter Yarchei Kala. We're so happy that you were able to join us. Very last minute, we pivoted to Zoom. We thank Tracy and Daniela immensely for all their help in making that happen. At the end of the day, we think it was the right decision to make because Baruch Hashem, so many more people were able to join us that way. So we're very, very excited tonight to have an amazing group of panelists with us for a talk that we titled Inspiration and Innovation, Connecting Women to Torah Today. And I think that as you'll hear from our panelists, we have some people who are doing amazing things in the arena and sphere of connecting women to Torah. And this connects so beautifully to what we at Neely are all about. We at Neely are all about creating a Torah environment for women, not only in Chicago, but because of Zoom beyond the borders of Chicago. We offer many, many, many different opportunities for women, young and old, and everywhere in between to engage in Torah learning in different ways through different modalities. And now we're excited to connect with people beyond our borders and hear about the wonderful and tremendous things that they are doing to connect women to Torah, both in their communities and beyond as well. So I'm going to officially introduce the panelists for this evening and then get started with the questions that we have for them. So first we have Rebbetzin Dr. Adina Schmidman. You can wave even though we all see your name and see who we are. Rebbetzin Schmidman is the director of the OU Women's Initiative. She and her husband, Rabbi Avraham Schmidman, are rabbi and Rebbetzin at the Lower Merion Synagogue in Ballast Inwood. Did I get that right? How do you pronounce that?
Kinwood, but don't worry, it's well.
Kinwood, Valley Kinwood, Pennsylvania, sorry.
You're not the first one, nor the one.
I should have practiced that. Prior to her position at the OU, she taught AP psychology as well as Judaic classes, in addition to directing the staff professional development program at Koslov Torah Academy Girls High School in Bala
Kinwood.
Dr. Schmidman earned a teacher certificate from BJJ in Yerushalayim. She graduated from Queens College in New York with a BA majoring in psychology, later received a Master of Science in school psychology from the same institution. She also has a Master's of Arts in Jewish Education and a certificate in educational technology from Azrieli. Her and her husband are the proud parents of four sons. Dr. Schmidman, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Next, we have Mrs. Hadassah Shemtov, hailing originally from upstate New York and currently living in LA. Mrs. Shemtov is the co-founder of the Bat Sheva Learning Center, founded in 2015. She currently serves as its director and continues to shape the organization's vision and direct its ongoing activities. She is passionate about education and excited about creating innovative learning opportunities for women. Like I said, she lives in LA where she teaches Gemara and Chumash to high school girls. Thank you so much, Mrs. Shemtov, for joining us, especially at this challenging hour on the West Coast. We appreciate you being here. And last but not least, we have Mrs. Alexandra Fletcher. Did I say your last name right?
Perfect.
Good. Mrs. Fletcher is an educator, speaker, op-ed columnist for Mishpacha Magazine, and co-host of the Normal From Women podcast. She holds a master's degree in secondary Jewish education from Azrieli and an undergraduate degree in English and communications from Stern College for Women. Alexandra is an active member of her local Cleveland community and a dynamic teacher with passion for community activism. She's a former chair of the Shabbos Project Cleveland, a founding board member of Chaviva High School for Girls, and co-founder of the Chizuk Retreat Cleveland. Thank you so much, Mrs. Alexandra, for being here with us tonight. So we are just going to jump right in and get started because we want to maximize the amount of time we get to hear from all of you ladies. So the first question that I'm going to put out there, and you can just let me know who wants to go first, is what was the biggest factor in your success today? And what was the biggest challenge? Anybody want to go first?
I'll jump in.
Yes.
So please. First of all, thank you, Neely, and thank you, Tamar, for the warm welcome. And I'm excited to hear from Hadassah and Alex and hear what you're doing on the ground. So thank you for the opportunity. So just, I know that you had said in terms of background, I just want you, I don't know where the bio is coming from. So just, and not because this is such a focal point, but you read Masters. Someone once asked me, do I have a legitimate PhD? The answer is yes. Someone asked me if I have a legitimate Rebbetzin degree. And I said, I guess. I'm married to my husband. So in terms of the success, I would say working for the Orthodox Union is a unique opportunity to have the engine of an enormous organization behind one's work. And it certainly has given opportunity, aside from the fact that it's an opportunity to move things forward and on a large scale, on a national scale, there's also opportunity for collaboration between departments. You have youth, college. There are a lot of opportunities that the OU puts out because of its vast reach that really affords a lot of space to innovate and to contribute. In terms of the challenges that I find that I face in terms of the work that we do, being the chair, the director of a women's department can put the work that we do in, I would say, the bullseye. It can be fraught with challenges. And when I started the department, the department started in 2017, and I was given the opportunity to begin our work, they wanted to launch a department with buzz. And I met with a woman who said, well, if you want buzz and you want to have impact, you should take out an ad in every newspaper, find the most controversial women to write the most controversial pieces, and you will get buzz. I walked out of that office with tremendous clarity, and a mantra that I follow in the work that we do every day, which is we're going to impact through contribution, not commotion. And so I would say the challenge is how do you reach people? How do you impact people? It's through that ability to contribute to people's lives, but without agitating. And I think that is definitely a challenge. So thank you for the question.
I love that, contribution without commotion. That's a good one and so meaningful in so many ways. Thank you so much. Hadassah, why don't you go next?
Sure. I actually, now I had something else in mind to say, but now that you said that actually came to mind as something that also has been a really big challenge along those same lines. But first, just to tell you guys a little bit about who I am. So I'm Hadassah. I grew up in upstate New York, as I said. My parents are Chabad Shluchim at Cornell University. And I guess the story of my organization, my Child Learning Center, started, I guess, probably after I was in Israel for 2 years studying. And when I came back from sort of my seminary years learning, I realized that was sort of like the end of my formal Jewish education in like a very sort of intensive, rigorous way. And that was very disappointing to me and my friends. And what we were kind of looking for was a space where we can make learning from the original text something that's a part of women's lives, and to make that something that's normal and something that's just a part of Jewish life for women. And we started, it was like a real grassroots startup. We really just did this on our own, a bunch of, you know, young 20-year-old women starting in our basement apartment. And it's something that grew very gradually over time. And I think there's, when it comes to challenges, when you're trying to accomplish something, there's internal challenges and there's external challenges. And I would say for me, the internal challenge was this, a lot of it had to do with identity. I think like our instinct often is to sort of just be a bystander complaining about issues. And that ability to say like, oh, I could actually like be a catalyst of change. And like, I could be a leader who's like going to stand for something and create a movement. Like taking on that identity is scary. And for me, especially because by nature, I'm a more shy, private person, and being able to like identify myself as a leader and someone who like can take leadership, can like put my name behind something, was something that was very daunting. And it took me a long time to get used to. I think the first time I like published like an article about what I was doing, I remember like hiding, like I didn't want to go on social media for 3 days because I was like so scared to like see my face, you know, in the public eye. And by now I'm used to it, but like I think that was a big challenge for me, just to like take on that role and like just stand, you know, stand up to the plate and be like, yes, like this is something I believe in, this is something that I'm going to you know, take a leadership role in. And it took me time to like really adopt that. I think in terms of like external challenges, I think it's hard when you're, anytime you're creating some sort of movement, you know, like if it's just like, you're trying to like, you know, create a bunch of CRM or programs or whatever it is, then like, okay, you do what you do and hopefully people show up, you know, but like when you're really trying to create a movement that's shifting people's perspectives, it's something that takes a lot of time. And it can be, I guess, disheartening, you know, when you're like, you're working and working and trying and putting sometimes years of effort and like feeling like you're not getting anywhere. And it's not that you aren't getting where you are. It just feels like you're not getting anywhere. And I think like, and especially when you feel like people who you're trying to offer this to don't necessarily realize that this is what they need or what they want, you know, when you're trying to like bring up an awareness that there's a need for something. And that sort of leads me to what you said, Adina, what you said made me think of this, which is, I feel like it's always a challenge whenever you're trying to lead a movement of, on the one hand, you know, making it clear that there's a need, right? There's something that needs to change, something that we want to accomplish here. And to do that, you need to like show that there's a gap, right? There's a gap in the way women are connecting to Torah right now. There's a gap in the community. There's a gap in the way women see themselves in relationship to Torah, right? So on the one hand, you want to like show that there's a gap. But on the other hand, like you said, we don't want to be creating a commotion. Like something that was very important to me in my, like the way I would go about my organization was not to be like shattering the community's norms or, you know, creating like a revolution in the sense that's like breaking standards or breaking the way people see their traditional Jewish role. To me, it was very important for people to feel like this is like aligned with traditional Judaism, aligned with the way, you know, they've always seen their role within traditional Judaism. And yet at the same time, we're also creating a revolution. And I think like trying to find that balance of, on the one hand, showing that there's need, but on the other hand, not coming in and like trying to impose your agenda on a community that like has certain values and traditions that they want to uphold, and respecting that and valuing that, while also creating a revolution. I think that's something that's very challenging and is always something you need to like, you know, balance together. So yeah, I definitely identify with that challenge.
That's so profound. And I think that, yeah, all organizations that are dealing with women's Torah learning could identify with some of the challenges that you addressed. Thank you so much. Alex.
Sure. All of that resonates also very much in a lot of the work that I do. So I started off as a classroom teacher. I taught in Baltimore for 10 years in like a community type of school, both middle school and high school, the Moody Kodesh, as well as English, which was amazing because I'm the English major with a master's in Jewish education. So I was able to really combine both of those passions. And then we moved to Cleveland and I taught probably about 5-6 years here, English, high school, middle school English. And really during that time moved into the writing space. And I would say it took about 14 years until I started taking more, 14 years of adulthood, whatever, you know, until I started taking more of like leadership roles in the community. So it's not like, you know, oh, I got married at 22 and I'm chairing the Shabbos Project. You know, this was a gradual process for me of sort of identifying my passions, figuring out my skills, building a reputation also in the community where then you're asked to be parts of these things. You know, it's, you know, it just takes time. And it's just actually a message I would really love to give to women who are interested in being involved in the community. It's not just like you have a desire, but sometimes it may not happen. There is a process there. But in terms of successes, everything that I've been involved in here in Cleveland is because I worked with a team of amazing women. Shabbos Project was a team of amazing men and women, but Chaviva High School also was a team of amazing men and women, but really started with like internal conversations of like-minded women who, you know, had a passion about something, felt, you know, really strongly identified a need, and then joined together and joined forces. And really that power of sisterhood, which I think is so incredible. That's what we really tapped into. And the Chizuk Retreat is basically part of the Chizuk Mission, which was a founding organization here by Barry Feld of Eshet Torah. And it was me sitting down with Barry Felt and a really good friend and thinking, you know what, we need to have like a mini retreat for women. Women need, because like, what's the need? You know, what is it that women need and how can we fill that need? So I'm a big believer in terms of success is you can't do it alone. You shouldn't do it alone. You need to identify it. Identify a need, find like-minded people who also see that need. And it's amazing the power that you all can have together in terms of getting things done. So it's wonderful for me to have this opportunity. You know, I've been now in Cleveland 10 years, just sort of look back and see, these are some of my best friends that we've just sort of joined forces to do things together. In terms of challenges, what Hadassah was saying resonates a lot. You know, when you put yourself out there and you stick your neck out, you're putting yourself in the public eye. My first experience with that was being part of, you know, chairing the Shabbos Project. And like, you don't even realize, but like you're put in a leadership position and then like people are looking to you and like, you're the leader and like you're making decisions and you might make wrong decisions, you know? For me as a writer, you know, I'm an opinion columnist, so I'm just blasting my opinion, you know, and then an international audience of Mishpacha magazine that people can read your stuff and be triggered or be upset or be like, oh, she's the one with the big mouth, you know, but I'm also a community member. I also have friends. So it's, I've just found over the years, just coming to grips with the fact that like, it's not like I wanted it this way. It just sort of happened that, wait, you are in the public eye. And with that comes challenges where people are going to, even if they don't tell you, they disagree with you, maybe thinking in their mind that they disagree with you. And that may, I mean, I'm just showing some, you know, vulnerabilities here, but that may impact friendships. That may impact your standing in the community for good or for bad. And it's just, it's part of the package. And that's something that I've really just had to toughen my skin, you know, and through my experience of being involved in different communal matters.
And we appreciate your vulnerability and being so open, because I think that there's so much to learn from each of you. So we appreciate all that you share.
I just want to add to what you said. I just want to say also like that, like when you do put yourself out there and like, you know, take on that leadership role with confidence, like I found that that's like, once I made that shift of like really being prepared to publicly like present myself as the leader of this organization, I feel like that's when changes really started to happen. Like as long as I was still like hiding behind the organization's name and like didn't want to put myself out there too much, like there was a limit to how much I could really do. And as hard as it was, like I felt like that's when like I broke a lot of like, you know, broke through a lot of barriers that were up before. So just an encouraging note for people who are struggling with that.
That's very encouraging. I want to remind those who are watching, the attendees, that at the bottom of your screen, there should be a Q&A option. And please, as our panelists are speaking, if any questions are sparked, please write them in and the moderator will send them off to me. And at the end, we'll have time for question and answer. So please be sending your questions in. All right, let's go on to the next question. So women's Torah learning, right? This huge umbrella, this huge topic within women's Torah learning. What would you say your favorite topic is to speak about, to write about, to learn about with other women? What's your favorite topic or issue? Let's switch things up this time and we'll start with Alex.
Okay. So it's very interesting. I'm going to tell you, it's, you know how they say teachers, like this, it's one thing in terms of what you love to learn, but it may be very different what you love to teach. So I definitely fell in love with more textural learning. I went on Mechelat MTSY, you know, that became really personal for me, you know, in terms of like really, you know, learning inside, and seminary was very into that. So, you know, that's a personal passion of mine, but now I'm going to switch gears to my Chizuk retreat role, where that's adult education and women's education. And what we've found in our experience, and I'm very curious to hear what the other panelists think about this from their experiences as, you know, women teachers, is the typical target audience member in our community in Cleveland, not necessarily like, you know, they went to Stern, YU, Modern Orthodox, Hashkafa per se, but they're not yeshivish. They're just, you know, they may have gone to out-of-town B-Sackos, somewhere in the middle. These women are craving chizuk and Hashkafa. That's what they want. And they associate textual learning with dry and lacking hashkafa and amuna. So every time we're creating our programs or bringing in speakers, it's always that delicate balance, but it's also like, hey, there's Shira Smiles out there where you're hitting all those bases and you can get chizuk and amuna and hashkafa through the text. So I find that always a battle just in terms of creating programming for women is that you need to reach women where they're at. And I hope I'm answering your question. You need to reach women where they're at and give them what they want because you need people to come. But you also want to expose them to new, they may not have as much experience in that type of learning. You also want to expose them to new things and try different things out, you know? So I find that that's sometimes a little bit challenging.
That certainly resonates with conversations we have within Neely also. How do we reach everyone? People are at different levels when it comes to textual learning. You know, some people love it. Some people don't want to go anywhere near it and everyone in between. And we want to reach them all. So I definitely that resonates with me for sure. Adina, do you want to go next?
Sure. So I find that in terms of, it's interesting, I like, Alex, how you're making a distinction between what you like to learn and what you like to teach. I think that's an interesting distinction. For me, what I enjoy teaching is tefillah. I find that it's so actionable. They're words that people know, and yet the depth is profound. Every time I teach, I feel like I'm learning myself, which is so exciting. And then you can put it right back into what you're doing. Right now, I happen to be teaching for the shul. I'm teaching Kriya Shema Al Hamita. Who knew that it is so remarkably, there's so much to learn. And even in the Shema itself. So I find tefillah to be a topic of choice. And I think just to add to what Alex pointed out, I think sometimes the idea of textual study, like there's a bifurcation. Textual study means serious, dry. Hashkafa means like, you know, esoteric and fluffy. And I don't think that the two have to be worlds apart. I think that there can be grounded hashkafa. And I wonder if people just, you know, if they could be handed hashkafa with a source sheet, and if they, like they wouldn't even know that that's there's a source sheet, meaning it, or don't call it's branding. If you call a textual study, they're gonna, you know, pivot away. If you don't call a textual study, then they're there. I also have tried myself to follow a shear that has a source sheet without looking at the source sheet. And I think a good teacher is not glued to their source sheet, and that you can sort of, it's an interesting experience to know that the sources are there. You could look down if you wanted to, but there's something liberating about not being pulled into the page. So that's,
can I just add a little, can I add a little experience to that? So with our Chizuk Ritchie, we also have Rosh Chodesh Shirim, and I gave one on Cheshvan, and these normally our speakers do not provide source sheets, but I did. And afterwards, one of the coordinators was like, I don't remember the last time I was at a shir where no one looked at their phone. And I'm like, because they're holding source sheets.
That's smart.
That's great. That's amazing. I love that. Thank you. Hadassah, what about you? Favorite topic?
Okay, yeah. So when you sent me this question, I wasn't sure, like, topic. I mean, like, how do I choose a favorite topic? But I guess if we're talking about in general, like types of general genres of study, definitely I grew up Chabad. So my first love, I would just definitely have to say, is Hasidus. That's something that I've spent a lot of time learning in depth. And I think when you guys are talking about sort of like merging this world of spirituality and Hashkafa and grounding it in something that's, you know, rigorous, to me, that's like what the study of Hasidus does for me. Like, I think we often think of spirituality as being sort of out there and fluffy and like non-academic, and the ability to take spiritual concepts and study in a rigorous academic way to me is extremely powerful and transformative. So that I would say is my first love. My second love, I would definitely say, both for learning and for teaching, is Gemara. I think for me, my first time like learning Gemara in a serious way was when I was, you know, out of high school, post high school in Israel. And it was extremely eye-opening for me. And I think both learning Gemara for itself and also just being able to understand halacha, the background of halacha in general, like seeing the process of halacha and how it evolves, completely changed the way I understand Torah Shabbat Peh, completely changed the way I understand like the way we practice Judaism. And I think for my students also, like, I think not having access to that, really, like, I feel like a lot of the questions that I've seen my high school students have had to do with not having understanding of the way Tarsha Malpet works, and honestly, not having an exposure to any sort of Gemara or anything like that. And I think, you know, I think a lot of, like you said, there's always a challenge to kind of, you know, different women want different things or think that they're going to appreciate different things. And for me, like being able to introduce, especially women who have never been, women or girls who have never been exposed to Gemara before, introducing that to them, and just seeing the way it opens up their world of Judaism, to me is just so rewarding. Especially when I've seen sometimes women who, like, I've offered a program where there was Gemara was one of the subjects offered, and women who came were like, oh, that's so not my thing. Like, I'm not really interested in it, but I guess I have to learn it because this is part of the program. And then, like, at the end of the program, they were like, whoa, that was really cool. Like, that totally, like, changed the way I understand so many things. And I think until you've been exposed to it, you don't even realize how much, like, how much of the picture of Torah you're missing when you don't have exposure to that area of Torah. So to me, that's something that's really, something I really love, is being able to introduce that world of Torah to my students.
Sure. I love that you're all doing, you know, eye-opening things for women by women, right? The source sheets, learning about Kriyat Shema Lamita, teaching women Gemara who have never learned it before. And I think when it's taught by women, it's all the more powerful. So that's very, very special. Moving on to the next question. What advice would you give women today who are looking to pursue careers that will make an impact on the Jewish community? So that could be broad. And I feel like you've already all given some great lessons and ideas, but, you know, honing in on that idea of advice for women who are starting out in their careers and looking to make an impact on the Jewish community, what advice would you give to them? Hadassah, we'll start with you this time.
Okay. Yeah. Something I actually didn't say before, which I'll say it now, is I think, like, the most important thing, at least for me starting out, especially because it was what I was doing was very much like a grassroots type of thing, is perseverance. And what I mean by that is, I remember someone once telling me, and this stuck with me like my entire journey, someone told me, you know, most startups fail within the first like couple years. And the startups that fail are not the ones that don't have good ideas. It's not like the ones that succeed are the ones that have the best ideas. It's the ones who just keep going even when they fail. Because most people, like, you're going to fail. There's going to be challenges. But like the ones who just keep pushing forward anyway, those are the ones who end up succeeding. And most people just get deterred. They get, like, you know, bogged down and by the challenges, and they just drop it, right? They just let go. And to me, that was something that really stuck with me. And in my head, I was always just like, I'm going to persevere. Like, even if this feels like a failure, even if it feels like this is not working, like, people are not buying into this, people are not getting it, this is not working, right? Like, just that, having that mindset of, like, just keep going. Like, they're, like, change is slow and change takes time, but like things are going to happen, that you're going to grow, you're going to, that, just having that in mind, like, really, really helped me a lot. Yeah, I mean, like, there's things are going to be hard and things are going to be challenging. The other thing I was thinking of when you asked that question was, now I can't remember.
We can come back if you need a moment. Yeah.
Another thing that for me I found to be really important is, you know, when you're starting out, you want to have a vision of, like, what you're trying to do. And you really need people to be holding you accountable to that vision. I think for me, like, having a board that, like, just held me accountable, like, how I could feel like we all know what the vision is, and, like, I'm not just doing this on my own, there's people who are supporting me and, like, you know, with me in, like, in making sure this is successful. That was something that was really, really important. So I feel like that's like a really important key to success, is having a support team that shares that vision with you and is able to, you know, hold you accountable to making that happen.
Thank you so much. Adina, do you want to go next?
Sure. I think this was touched on, but I want to elaborate on this idea of identifying needs. I would frame it slightly differently, or I would add to that idea as taking the initiative. There are so many opportunities to look for holes, to look for needs. What's missing? And it's interesting, my mother this evening said to me, how do you think of your different ideas? I said, it's actually good you are asking me now, because I'm on a panel in about 2 hours. So thank you for asking me the question. And my response, and it's funny, she had never asked me that before, but my response to her was, I really try to think of what's missing. What is it that the community can use? And how can we go about filling that gap, filling that need? And one example that comes to mind, we started a mikvah attendant professional development program. That was something that didn't exist. It was something that struck me as being value added to the community. What can one contribute to be value added? And I think by taking that initiative, you already step forward and you already identify yourself as a doer, as someone who's invested, someone who's engaged with your community. And one can only build and continue to build on that. And if one wants to go further in terms of getting involved on a more formal level, that's what one can take that, those types of programs and use them as an example of how one can continue to contribute if one isn't part of an organization. So I think it happens to be that the mikvah programming was something done with while I was already at the OU. But I think that's what, to me, that's, it's having that perspective of where can I be value added to my community on a micro way? And then how can one take that and make that macro?
As you're both speaking, you know, I thought of another, I guess, additional question to piggyback on this one, and you can answer or we can come back. And that is, when you were starting off in your own careers, did you imagine that you would be doing what you're doing today? Did you see yourselves as people who, you know, wanted to make an impact on the Jewish community and kind of went down that road from the beginning, or did life lead you down this path in a different way?
I think for me, you know, I grew up in NCSY. I mentioned I went to Michal, but I was also really, you know, I was on different boards in NCSY and learned how to be a leader through the experience of NCSY. It really is leadership training. So it gave me a taste for that then. And I always wanted to. I have a question for you, and I'm going to answer now the original question. Yes. It's Esther, is your husband a rabbi?
Teacher, high school teacher.
He's a teacher. So my husband was learning in COLA and then decided to go to medical school. So we had like our whole plans out life that we were going to go to community COLA, be rabbi in Rebbetzin. That's what I wanted. And then wait, now my husband's, you know, a totally different track. And I had the mindset that to contribute to the community, you need to be a Rebbetzin. Sorry, Adina. But it was because of
no, I think it's actually the lay leadership. If that's huge, that's a huge,
That's something that I had to come to terms with very much so and understand. I had a mentor who literally called me. She's like, you don't understand. It's dafka because you're not married to a rabbi. It's dafka because you're not a rabbi. It's how you can make an impact. And it was a mindset shift because I said, I don't remember if I mentioned, I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, and it's a real, you know, Kiruv community. And all of the people who were running that town and doing everything were all Rebbetzins. I just thought you had to be a Rebbetzin. It was like, you know, the job description. So I had to overcome that. Feel, you know, it's almost a sense of like inadequacy. Like, who am I? Like, who do I think I am to even do this? You know, are people going to listen to me? What's my clout? And my, you know, you ask the question of what, you know, what women can do. My real advice is to start small. Dina talked about, and I said identifying a need, and you used a different phrase, Dina. I can't remember what you said.
Taking the initiative.
Taking the initiative. Part of that is seeing like, being really honest with yourself and seeing what can I bring to the table? What are my talents? What are my gifts? What lights my fire? And then trying to meld that with the need that you see, because you could be like, hey, I see a need, like the mikvah attendant thing. I see a need for that, but I don't know if I'm the right person for that job. You need to be the right person using your own co-hosts to be able to contribute. And the way I started small is, well, first of all, with writing, I had a personal experience, actually this transition with my husband from learning to working, and I wanted to write about it. And I'm a big reader of Cross Currents. I was a big reader of Cross Currents. Also, this is Rabbi Alderson's blog. And I was always been intrigued by communal issues. Always loved that. Even as a teenager, I would read the Jewish Observer from front to back. And I just like pitched this article idea. He's like, sure. And like, it happened to be that it went viral. So that was helpful for my confidence. It was like my first article that published online. But just small, like I wanted to start from that concept. I wanted to do like a panel with women talking about in, you know, in having a panel discussion just like this of women whose husbands were either learning or in Clay Kodesh in transition to working. And like, that was very relevant to my community. And we just made it happen, just small things. And that sort of got me in the space of speaking and writing and, you know, the podcast. Like, a friend reached out to me, like, I think there's a need for a woman's podcast. There's not a lot of from women doing that. Okay, like, let's just start. It was in the middle of COVID, just like baby steps. Like, that sounded so overwhelming to me. Just start, like, start small, like little things that we can do. And, you know, with Hashem's bracha, you know, you really can be matzli up with the right support and the right people, not on your own, the right people, you know, that you're joining forces with.
Thank you so much. Just the question I asked earlier about, you know, seeing yourself on this path. I don't know, Hadassah or Adina, if there's anything that you wanted to add about your own careers and your own trajectories.
So this was something, the OU was not, it wasn't a job that it didn't exist. I envisioned myself, this is where, okay, true. we're all friends here and transparent.
Is this being recorded?
I was going to say what happens in this room stays in this room, but it is
now happens in this Zoom stays in this Zoom.
In the Zoom.
Right. So the truth is, even as a child, I wanted to be a school principal. The community here is small, and that did not, at some point, became very obvious that that was not going to happen. I taught for many, many, many years and loved being in the classroom, but if I felt it was time to move forward. And if that was not going to be the case, then what was the next move? I met with somebody, unfortunately he passed away, but it was a very pivotal conversation, not so much because of, I met with him talking about my background, which is being a school psychologist, and my PhD is in educational psychology. And this was someone who was a supervisor and as a school, you know, supervising school psychologist. When I spoke with him, and with no offense to any school psychologist in the audience, because you're doing very holy and important work, didn't feel like it was, as you put it, Alex, great expression. I actually wrote it down, lighting my fire.
I his quote Barry Feld because it's not my phrase.
Okay, I love the phrase.
Yeah.
His wife walked into the room and said, what are you guys talking about? And I said, oh, you know, I'm looking at possibly a career change and I'm talking to Gary about being a school psychologist. She said, well, what are the other options on the table? I said, well, actually, I really am so interested in helping Rebbetzins and doing Rebbetzin programming and supporting Rebbetzins. And there's so much to do. And then I paused. And the contrast between speaking to Gary and speaking to Ruthie was so remarkable. They were worlds apart in terms of being animated and engaged and fired up. And it was very, that was extremely telling. And then the question only was, which organization was out there to be the launching pad for this type of programming? Of course, ironically, when I came to the OU, I was told no Rebbetzin programming. We got to focus on women in general. So that became a little bit more back burner. There's still things, obviously, that we're doing for Rebbetzins. It's a wonderful partnership between the OU and YU in this sphere. But it was, I think, to your, you know, just in response to the question, it's really seeing what animates you and what animated me. It was so obvious to me. It took a while to then figure out what's the right place and the divine choreography in how this, in fact, moved forward was remarkable. But it's listening to yourself and being very self-aware and being in attune to what is it that you enjoy? What is it that you feel is your passion? Because that's what will drive you. That's what will inspire you and allow you to inspire others.
I think that story is so profound and so telling and really, really drives the point home. So thank you for being willing to share.
I thanked Gary, Alav Hashalom, and I thank Ruthie for walking into the room, because had she not walked into the room,
yeah,
I don't know what would have happened.
Sometimes it's like it is that divine choreography and the right people asking you the right questions to really exactly. help you, you know, because ultimately it's only you who can make those decisions. But sometimes those people asking you those questions that spark the ideas is really, really meaningful. Thank you. Hadassah, is there anything that you wanted to add in terms of your own professional journey?
I guess, I mean, I said this already before, but I think I definitely did not see myself as like a, you know, leader, in this sort of way, like when I first started. I think for me, it really came as a result of really seeing a need that was, it was a gap that I saw very clearly in the community and that frustrated me. And it was really like an outgrowth of me channeling that frustration towards change. I remember like the night that like this whole idea for this organization started, I was at my friend's house. It was a Friday night meal. I was at her family for Friday night. And we were like, got into this really heated discussion talking about all the issues and all the things that like we wanted, we wish were different. And like all the things that we felt were missing in our community. And then like, after like hours of doing this, and I feel like we do this so often, right? We love to like sit and talk about all the problems. And then we were like, okay, like, what are we waiting for? Like, are we waiting for somebody else to come along and do this? Like, why don't we just do it? And we had no idea what we were doing. it was like a totally new arena. But for me, like, it really was like this realization. I remember this having this realization that like, if I'm the one who sees the need and sees the gap, like that's a sign to me that like, I need to, you know, like you said, take initiative to create the change. So.
B'makom she'eino isha, right? Absolutely. So some of you have alluded to specific people who have helped you along your journey, but maybe there's someone else you want to talk about. The next question is there a specific person who influenced or motivated you the most to connect women to Torah? Alex, let's start with you. I know you had mentioned someone you work with, but
hard question. I don't think I prepared for this one.
We can come back to you, or you can stay past if you don't.
Okay. I would say yes. Barry Falls. I wish I'm going to send this to her. I keep talking about her. She is a very special person, and everyone should have a person like this in their life, where this is someone who sees your strengths, sees your talents, and is not afraid to tell you, you know? And you're going to be like, oh, you're blushing, you feel uncomfortable, but they're telling you for the purpose of building you as a leader so that you can take action. And I call her, I mean, it's like constant eye and toe. It's like, she just sees the good in people and she doesn't do it just for me. I mean, I see when she gives chaburas, I see when we have meetings, it's constantly like pinpointing people's strengths and almost like pushing them, like, look what Hashem gave you. You have to do something with this. And it's incredibly, incredibly inspiring working with someone like that. I mean, at this point, I guess I think I forgot to prepare this question, but at this point I would say yes. And there actually have been other people in my life, someone who counseled me when I was deciding what to study in college. Also like what track I wanted to go into teaching, you know, but I was afraid to like, oh, I should go get a master's in Jewish education. Like, am I really going to go do that? I really wasn't sure. And it was someone who also just to have someone who sees your potential. You don't have to be a finished product. We're never like, we all still have potential, even if we are accomplishing right now, but it's someone who can see that potential. And I'm the kind of person who really needs a push. Like before I started writing for Mishpacha, it was this first person that I told you was helping me find my, you know, with choosing my degree. She was the person. I had written a pitch to one of the senior writers at Mishpacha, just like asking advice. Like, I really want an opinion column in this magazine. You know, I've written a lot other places. And he was like, you got to earn your stripes. Like, who do you think you are? In a nice way. But like, you got to find out. You have to talk to editors. You have to see what you need to do to earn it. And I went back. I was quiet for like 4 months. It completely, completely discouraged me. I was like, okay, good. The self-talk, like, who do you think you are? And I was really doubting myself. And I went back to this person. I call her my visionary influencer, this first person who's made a big impact on my life. And she's like, Alex, you're totally enough. You totally can do this. Just email the editor, send her some of your work, and just ask for what you want. And that is literally just what I did, like out of nowhere. But I couldn't hustle myself. I needed the push. I don't think I ever would have done it. So I am a big believer in having people who support you to help push you along, especially if you're more hesitant, you know, a little less confident or a little shy, it's just so important to have people who can, you know, see your ability and encourage you.
Thank you so much. Adina?
So I was very fortunate to have two grandmothers who lived well into my adult years. In fact, my Bubby's yard site happens to be this evening and tomorrow, Rosh Chodesh Shvat. And they were a huge influence on my life. My Bubby, in terms of her tenacity and her feistiness and her drive. We lived in Birmingham, Alabama for 9 years, and she came down to Birmingham to help Adina make the PhD from age 87 to 93 on the plane with the frozen gefilte fish in, you know, raw gefilte fish in the hand luggage, because you have to make gefilte fish from scratch, until she told me 1 year that we're making loaf. And I said, fine, Bubby, we're making loaf. We'll do loaf. And then my grandma, who was a very gregarious, bright American woman who stood tall. She was a Rebbetzin in Great Neck, Long Island, and was a wonderful role model for many people, including myself, both as a granddaughter to a grandma, but also as a Rebbetzin. The two of us were in cahoots. What also made my grandmothers very unique in the area of Torah learning was that they actually remarkably both had formal Torah education. My Bubby went to Yavne in Telz in Lithuania, and my grandma was in the second graduating class at Yeshiva Flatbush for elementary school. So that was something remarkable, and they took that Jewish education. My Bubby used to use expressions. She always used to say, you know, in Yiddish, I know a pasuk, and the psukim were on her lips. You know, she would describe somebody, you know, who was head and shoulders above the rest. She would quote a pasuk from Sefer Shmuel, Mishech Mavamala. And my grandma had someone in the community who painted. When she moved into her apartment after my grandfather passed away, she actually had him write her favorite psukim, some of which she sort of used poetic license, and they became her psukim. She rewrote them in her own way, be that as it may, but had them painted on the walls. And so these were women who appreciated Torah, appreciated learning in their own way. They certainly served as role models for me in terms of drive, pushing, education, and contributing to the community in a huge way.
Wow, that's so beautiful. Thank you, Hadassah. What about you?
So definitely many women come to mind, but I think the two that stand out. One is Adi Bitter. She was my Gemara teacher when I was in Israel for my second year. She, I think, first of all, this is my first exposure to like rigorous Gemara learning, and she was amazing. She really like threw us in head first, like just gave us a Gemara, gave us a dictionary, and was like, just do it. And it was overwhelming, and it was frustrating, and it was amazing. So that was that. And I think this, besides for just the learning part of it, I think she sort of just was a role model for me of like an approach to learning. I have this vision of her standing in the classroom, like the Gemara projected on the board, writing all over it with her wearing her baby on her. She had like had a baby in the middle of the year, and like there was something like really beautiful about it. And I think she just had this very sincere or has this very sincere like approach to her, like Avodas Hashem in general. And like just her Torah learning was just like a very natural part of that very sincere, honest relationship with Hashem. And I don't know, to me, that was very inspiring of like what a woman who's invested in Torah learning, like a from God-fearing woman invested in Torah learning looks like. So that was something very inspiring to me. And to this day, she's like one of my biggest supporters. Like she's subscribed to our email list, and like every email that goes out, she'll like write back to me, like a long detailed email in response to like every email that goes out. It's like really, really nice to have that support. The other person I would say is my mother. My mother is also probably one of my biggest supporters, and she's someone who really, I think, believes in me in almost like a, almost to like an irrational way. I remember when we, after that Friday night dinner, like I called her and I was like, you know, I think I want to start an organization. And she like completely like, as it, like straight face was like, okay, make, you know, call a board meeting and I'll come. And we shouldn't live in the same city, but we came on Zoom, and like me and a bunch of my friends sat down, and she's like, okay, I want all of us to think about like a vision of what you want to create, write it down on a piece of paper, we're going to talk about it. And we literally did that. We wrote down like, you know, I had this vision that I wanted to create this like woman's base midrash. And she was like, okay, so we're going to do it. And like, just that confidence in me and my ability to like pursue something really big, gave me a lot of confidence. She's one of the wisest women I know. And to have her, like, I guess, trust and belief that I was able to, you know, build something really great was really, has and does push me to this day to like continue building and growing. So,
well, yeah. I have so much to say in comment, but for the sake of time, because there's so many great questions, there are so many questions coming in. People want to ask you so many things, but I do think that the last question is a really important one. So we're going to make this a lightning round. Okay. So in a succinct response, how do you see the world of women's Torah learning changing in the next 10 years? Not easy to reply in such a succinct way, but what do you think? Let's start with Adina.
Okay. I see more educators at the mic, more women stepping forward and teaching and having more wide reach, and the bar of scholarship being raised.
I like that vision. Alex, what about you?
I think technology is going to have a huge impact. It already has Zoom, and Zoom is here to stay. I think it's going to enable more women to learn from women from all over the world in their living rooms. I'm also thinking about the impact of social media on Torah learning, and what that is I think Meaningful Minute is, I'm also involved with Meaningful Minute, on the app, sharing bite-sized words of Torah learning, small videos. I know we can scoff at that. It's not really academic. It's not thorough, but, people are on social media a ton, and people gain inspiration from social media. And I think that's just going to increase those small bite-sized nuggets of Torah wisdom and inspiration.
I know we're lightning round, but if I can just also add the Tardi Mechanach Yomi program that reaches thousands of women, also bite size, using technology, it's phenomenal. And the next cycle is starting January 20th. Mm-hmm. And to your point, I think that social media drive is huge.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Hadassah, what about you?
Okay, so lightning round. Number one, woman teaching woman. So women are in educator and leadership roles where, you know, girls can look to female teachers as the ones who are knowledgeable and can therefore be taking mentorship roles for them. Number two, women feeling more comfortable and more of like a sense of belonging when it comes to Torah. You know, like if there's a bookshelf of Sfarim, like a woman should feel comfortable and feel like this is hers. This is something that I have access to. It's something that's part of my world. And I would say the third thing is, you know, for the community as a woman as a whole, like, you know, authentic Torah learning should just be part, a natural part of the life of a Jewish from woman, just like any other aspect of from life.
Thank you. Okay. I'm taking all the questions that are coming in. I'm just going to try to distill them down to one or two because there's so many. Quite a few questions coming in about women in Gemara learning. So this might be directed to Hadassah, but of course, very curious to hear Adina and Alex's opinions as well. How do you answer people who say women should not learn Gemara, especially with women in all sorts of professions today? Do you think there's an obstacle for women in your opinion? Do women have a different way of studying Gemara than men? Maybe Hadassah, if you can, you know, quickly speak to the point, although it's not a quick answer, of women in Gemara learning.
Yeah, good question. So the point that whoever it was brought up about, you know, women today having access to, you know, any secular field of knowledge, and being able to climb to the highest levels of academia in those areas. Yeah, to me, I mean, I think that's the biggest reason why we need to be giving women today access to every part of Torah in its fullest depth. I've definitely seen firsthand many women who have felt like they have much more freedom, you know, to excel academically in the secular world, and not within their Jewish learning. And to me, that's a tragedy. And that has a direct result on women's sense of belonging to their Judaism, a woman's commitment to Torah in general. And yeah, I mean, I think obviously it's not about Gemara per se, it's about you know, the fact that women should have access to the highest levels of learning within Torah. And whatever reasons why in the past, in previous generations, you know, there's not to get into a whole halachic discussion right now. I don't know if this is the time for it, but I think, you know, there's definitely a lot of modern day poskim. I think pretty much all poskim agree that something has changed in terms of women's education. I mean, that's pretty clear across the board. To how much that's changed is obviously a disagreement amongst, you know, modern poskim, but definitely the ones that I guess inform my opinion, definitely believe that whatever reasons women weren't supposed to or didn't need to have that level of learning in the past, they definitely absolutely need to today. I don't know if that answers the question enough, but
I think it's a good start. I'm beginning to think we're going to need a round two to this conversation because there's so many more questions. I'm going to end with one question. And, you know, I think this is an opportunity also for you to plug the wonderful organizations and opportunities that you're involved in. And that is, where did it go? For someone without a traditional Jewish education, where can someone acquire the basics of a solid, well-rounded foundation as an adult? Are there specific programs that you recommend for women who seem to be, you know, starting out on their journey or do not have any formal Jewish educational background? So how would you answer that? Alex, do you want to start?
Sure. I mean, there are amazing organizations that are designed just for this. You can go at organizational level, like Partners in Torah. Now I heard that National Partners in Torah has pivoted completely to Zoom. So that's really accessible. And I think just the plethora of online resources, websites. I know H.com is doing amazing work in this field. And the OU. I mean, I just think that it might be helpful nonetheless, even though there's so much out there, to have a mentor to guide the, you know, a person to try to find what's the best fit and find what's most accessible. But I think more than ever, there's learning available to people, you know, Jews of all levels.
Thank you. Adina?
I think I would echo what Alex is saying, and I would also add books. Let's not forget about traditional books. There's so many wonderful books out there that are that can be used as self-study or studying with a partner or a mentor. And I think a mentor is a fabulous idea. I think between organizations but I do think to address that particular person's request or need, it should be thought out just like a curriculum. And how can one approach this in a very systematic way so that they actually feel accomplished and they feel like they're growing rather than it being haphazard? I think it's a very thoughtful question that with a certain level of mindfulness and intent, I think the journey can be very rewarding.
Thank you. Hadassah, anything to add to that?
I mean, like what was said already, there's so many online resources today, thank God. You know, my organization, we very much like focus specifically on, you know, women who want to sort of take their skills to the next level and like access the original texts. So someone who's not there yet, that might not be the right thing for them, but I will take this opportunity to make a shameless plug for my organization. Women who do want to like actually delve into the original text. We have a lot of online courses. We have like textbooks that we've created, all kinds of resources. And the goal is really to give women who don't yet feel comfortable with like a sefer, a Hebrew sefer, with like the original halachic text, you know? Like we designed these courses and textbooks to like sort of help you through that process of gaining those skills. And we actually have a really fascinating course coming up on Hilchos Nida, giving sort of like the background to Hilchos Nida. It's not at all a practical halacha course. It's more about getting an understanding of like where the halachos come from and a lot of the spiritual significance behind Hilchos Nida. So it's really cool. And it's being offered in person in Chicago for Chicago women. My sister who lives in Chicago is actually going to be teaching it. So you can definitely contact me if you're interested in that.
Thank you so much. It is 9:03. We took 3 extra minutes of your time. I think we could go on for 3 more hours to have what to talk about. Hadassah, Alex, Adina, thank you so, so much, not only for your time tonight, but for the visions that you have and what you're doing for Jewish women the world over. I think that it sounds like each and every one of you is impacting people far beyond the cities that you live in. And it's so empowering and inspirational to connect with other women who are doing work in this sphere. So we wish you continued hatzlacha and luck, and Hashem should just give you so much strength to continue doing the amazing things you're doing. So many more messages coming in on how inspirational you all are and thanking you all. So it's not just me, it's everybody who's watching. We truly appreciate it. I have a feeling people are going to be interested in getting in touch, so we'll know where to reach you. Any final closing thoughts, comments, questions that you want to put out? I'll give you guys the last word.
Thank you, Tamar. You're an excellent moderator.
Oh, yes.
You guys made it very, very easy. It was so, so nice to meet you. Thank you to everybody who's joined us tonight for being a part of this Yarchei Kala. We continue in the summer. Maybe we'll get to see you guys again for a round two then. Thank you. Thank you. Everybody have a wonderful night and stay
warm. Thank you so much, Tamar.
And stay warm.
Good night,
everybody. Good night. Thank you so much.
Thank you.